Arts in Review. I'm back from my long spring nap and delighted to be with you Fridays 2 to 2:30, celebrating the best in live theater and cabaret in the greater Los Angeles area. We're going to be focusing on a world premiere play, Stoneface, starring an old friend of mine, written by an old friend of mine who, would you believe it, I didn't even know they knew each other, but they happened to be married. Please stay tuned to Arts in Review. And indeed, I am back once again. This is Julio Martinez. You are listening to Arts in Review, coming to you every Friday, 2 to 2:30. My in-studio guests are French Stewart, and I have trouble getting used to this name, Vanessa Claire Stewart.
I know, it's changed recently, so it's very confusing for everyone.
Now, French, I watched you grow up in theater from all those Justin Tanner plays during the 1990s.
That's right.
On into, actually, you did have a bit of a career on television for how many years were you on Third Rock from the
Sun? 6 years, yeah.
6 years.
Yeah.
Paid better than Justin.
A little bit better, a little bit better, yeah.
And Vanessa Claire, you first came to me as this delightful young lady who had written a stage version of the career of two of my old favorites, Louis Prima and Keeley Smith, Louis and Keeley live at the Sahara.
Mm-hmm.
You had a bit of a franchise with that.
Yeah, you know, we just kept going and going, and we're still, it's still in the works. We're still alive. We're just trying to figure out where our next gameplay is, but we're in the middle of attaching people and contracts and all the complications that come with that, but it's still alive and going. Now my dream is to be in New York at the same time with Stoneface, so wouldn't that be fun?
Now, Louis and Keeley I first saw at the Sacred Fools Theater, and coincidentally, this play. Now, I should give the complete title here, Stoneface, The Rise and Fall and Rise of Buster Keaton in a World Premiere. Now, I used to remark watching French go through the dozens of Justin Tanner plays that he did that he had this great deadpan delivery. I thought that was part of your great comedic gifts. And you have just so seamlessly morphed that into the persona of Buster Keaton.
Well, he's my hero. And I have a great depth of love for his work. And I just, I always thought that it would be, I mean, it sounds funny, but I thought, oh, that's my King Lear. That's like that's what I would aspire to. And fortunately, I married a person who wrote it for me and delivered it to me on my birthday.
Well, I've heard of a bride's coming to a marriage bringing gifts.
Yeah, yeah. A goat.
It was in my trousseau.
Yeah.
As my mother
in your trousseau,
it.
Yeah, yeah. She brought a goat and some shekels, and it was great. Yeah.
Now, my radio audience can't see you, Vanessa, but you come from a much later generation than Buster Keaton.
That's true.
How did you come upon doing this?
Well, I love history anyway, and somehow it's becoming my niche that I turn people's lives into stage plays for some reason. But I really enjoy taking a person, like researching them, and I hadn't really been familiar with that era or these people. It was just simply as I was falling in love with French, I knew that was one of French's heroes, and so I was like, well, I better get to know this guy if I'm going to get to know French. And so I just started reading books and watching the movies. And then when I found out it was his dream to portray the role, I felt like well, maybe I can help you. I hope I can.
Did you see a lot of the old silents, the shorts?
Yes, I eventually, like, a good bit of them are on either Netflix or YouTube. Almost all of the shorts are on YouTube. And my first exposure was actually watching his shorts at the silent movie theater. So that was sort of the best place to first receive it and see everyone react to it.
In full screen, right.
And exactly. Yeah. And see how the comedy lives up to today's standards. You know, how people are still laughing. I mean, he truly was ahead of his time, and I knew what it was. So
great physical comic timing is great physical comic timing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's amazing. You watch those old shorts and you realize those guys were creating the language of film. You know, and it hasn't changed over, you know, a century. It's the same thing. What they created and just the language of what they did and the language of film, it's the same thing. And so it's really refreshing to go back and watch it when it was first just really happening.
Well, and I still look at it and go, how did they do that? You know, it's 2012 and I'm going, how did they do that? You know, and it just speaks to the genius of Keaton, really, I think.
Having an idea of doing this, I could imagine maybe developing a film or a miniseries, but you have to pack all of this imagery on stage, as well as the rather melodramatic drama of his life, personal life, which was not always too bright.
Right.
In fact, rather dark.
No, it is. It is, and it's and that's the hardest part is that his. His life was interesting from the time he was born till the time he died. And so you have to pick off chunks while sort of sketching out his life so that people get a sense of who he was. And that's the hardest thing. That's all the hardest thing I always had with it. But, you know, when I was talking to Vanessa about it, she said, well, just play the middle part. Play the part of his life where you are. Uh-huh. You know, the middle-aged part, maybe you're a little past your game. You're a little beat up, and let's play that part. And then, you know, she created this wonderful vehicle where we could go back and forth in time and see who he was and then see who he became.
Stage-wise, it is never not interesting up there on stage. You flow into filmmaking, out of filmmaking. You morph the two together. You do some of the Buster Keaton classic bits, like the dinner table scene with Fats.
Yeah.
Wait, what's his last name?
Yeah, Fatty Arbuckle.
Fatty Arbuckle. I wanted to say Fats Waller, but...
That's all right. We could put him in there if you need it.
With Fatty Arbuckle, who also had a rather tragic life.
Yeah.
And so I'm assuming that your director, Jaime Robledo, that great Irish director, he had something
yeah,
to
Jaime
do with
Robledo
it.
Is the Puerto Rican Irishman.
Yeah.
he's amazingly talented and so gifted at staging. And the gift that he gave to me as a writer was simply, he told me to write whatever I wanted and he would figure out a way to stage it. And so I'd say, really? Well, we're going to put an underwater scene and we're going to make people come in and out of the screen. What do you think? He's like, I'll figure it out. And he did.
Yeah, he's remarkable. I worked with him on Watson and, you know, he's a remarkable director. He will take whatever he has and get the most out of it. You know, and if you don't have any technological trickery to give him, then he will create it out of smoke and mirrors. And this is a guy who's just ready to get on to the next big thing. He just, like, the more toys you give him, the more you'll get out of it. He's remarkable. He's really remarkable.
And Watson was also staged at Sacred Fools.
That's right.
And you had not too long been away from doing another run of voice lessons.
That's right, yeah.
Which is a Justin Tanner play.
Yeah, with Laurie Metcalf and Miley Flanagan. Yeah.
And if you want to see the many sides of French Stewart, go from seeing him do voice lessons to seeing Keaton.
Yeah.
Different character.
Yeah, it's a different thing. It's, you know, I enjoy doing really, you know, fun, loose things with Tanner, and he's, you know, I mean, he Justin Tanner's the reason that I have any kind of career, just doing plays with him, and I think that he's a marvel. But he has a certain language, and to go from that to being to doing, you know, something that's really just you know, I mean, it's the hard. This play is the hardest thing that I've ever had to do. It's just very physically and mentally difficult, but it's so much fun.
Now, this is a world premiere play, so generally, when you have that, you get your group of actors, you have your writer, yeah. You have your director, and there's got to be, I'd love to have been a fly on the wall during rehearsals of, this ain't going to work, this has to work.
Yeah. This was really intimidating coming together because of all the elements. And believe me, before we started rehearsal, we were all sitting in this wine bar across the street called the Faculty, sort of looking at each other going, scared to death, going, how are we going to make this happen? Because this is, you know, French's hero. It's also Joe Freya's hero, who plays the younger version of Keaton. And you know, and Jamie and I were intimidated by, you know, are we going to make the Keaton fans mad? Or we want to make sure that it's reverent enough, but also tell a story that people that don't know Keaton will have fun as well. And with all the elements of the film and the stunts and the acting and the, you know, it's just, it was so intimidating. But we knew if we could pull it off, it would be a memorable piece of theater, a risky, memorable piece of theater.
Yeah, it's true. People always say, you know, don't put all your eggs in one basket or don't bite off more than you can chew. But I think that every now and then it's really good to do that and just go for broke and think, okay, we're way in over our depth. We're trying to do more than what our money and our resources will allow. So let's just do it. And let's just call in our favors from all our friends. You know, we just like got together the best actors we could, and you know, like all the people that we really loved, and then we knew we had to have a deep bench, so we got great understudies and great designers, and we just threw them together with an impossible deadline, and we just kind of, you know, did it. And you
but
know.
Everyone's heart is on that stage. Everyone works so hard in this project.
Yeah, they work hard.
And it does carry a broad period of time. It's sort of epic in that way, because you do follow him from his child ethic, working with a vaudeville family, onto his very, very successful career in silent films, onto his not successful evolution into talkies, and beyond. And along the way, I don't want to give many things away, but there are some classic Buster Keaton bits in there. It must have taken a lot of timing and work to get the situation of being live on stage, walking into a film, and it is the film, then walking back out of the film.
Yeah. Yeah, and the disadvantage we have is that he, you know, I mean, you no matter what how you try, you're not going to be Buster Keaton, you're not. And but he had the one advantage he has is that he can do it. If he can do it once, great, it's on film. We have to do it every night.
Yes.
And so it becomes a little bit punishing. And sometimes, you know, the train goes off the rails, but, like, the audience seems to really stick with you and just, understand the spirit of it. So that was really more what we wanted to do, take these classic bits and bend them so that we could tell the story that we were trying to tell about him, and also pay homage to, you know, who the guy that I think that is just, you know, he's peerless.
The woman the character I worry about is the woman who plays your first wife,
right?
Played by Tegan Ashton Cohen, because you do one of the bits that I actually first saw in the Donald O'Connor biofilm of Buster Keaton, where he and Anne Blythe did that routine.
Yeah.
And it's very physically demanding of the woman there. I don't know how much you weigh, sir, but
I'm like 155, but it's the most demanding scene of the night, and it's from Spite Marriage, and it's Tegan Ashton Cohen dragging a very drunk Buster Keaton around the stage and manipulating his body to eventually get him in a chair, and it's a miraculous thing every night. But you know, Tegan's a champ, and Tegan's a sport, and you know, we've got really just solid cast, people who really, you know, dig it out for you. So every night it's an adventure.
Oh, it was a hard thing in casting to find somebody that could do both physically and acting wise what we needed them to do, and it was we were lucky to have found a cast that could.
Yeah.
By the way, folks, I have in studio Vanessa Claire Stewart, playwright, French Stewart, actor, who are both involved in the world premiere play that's currently running at Sacred Fools Theater, Stoneface, The Rise and Fall and Rise of Buster Keaton. And it plays Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sunday matinees at 2 p.m. And for information, please call 310-281-8337, 310-281-8337, or go online to www.sacredfools.org.
And we've also added Thursdays.
Added Thursdays.
Yeah, we're
You know how long you're running yet?
Right now, we're running until July 15th.
Yeah. But we've been packing them in, so we're just kind of moving it along.
I want to do a brief interlude. I love talking to you guys, but I alluded earlier that I first became acquainted with Vanessa Claire here when she was a Smith and involved in another world premiere at Sacred Fools Theater, Louie and Keeley Live at the Sahara. I've watched that show evolve through three theaters. I believe it should be off-Broadway. People just have to see these two people be these two characters on stage. And I also think you should hear a bit of Vanessa. So this is taken from your CD that you recorded, and this is actually you.
This is me. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And Vanessa in I Give You Love.
Beautiful.
But more than this, I wish you love. And in July, a lemonade to cool you in some leafy glade. I wish you health, but more than wealth. Snowflakes fall. Most of all, when snowflakes
and that is is my in-studio guest, Vanessa Claire, formerly Smith, now Stewart.
Ah, sometimes at home she sings in the shower, and that's a private thing that I get. It's so sweet. It's so nice.
And which originally, the show originally premiered in 2009, if I remember.
Premiered 2008 at Sacred Fools, and then we just went for 2 years.
Yeah. Can people get this CD?
Oh, goodness. We do have a whole bunch of CDs. I think you can go to the website. It's still live, liveatthesahara.com.
Oh, you've got to hear all of this.
Yeah.
You don't know this, but I talked to Keely Smith after she saw your show.
Oh, really? Yeah.
She said, I can't believe it. She did that vibrato on purpose. See, I don't have a choice, but she actually did it on purpose.
She's great. Like, I was terrified when she came to see the show for the first time, but she'd seen it 3 times and given her thumbs up, so relieved. Just we've had the Keatons come down to see our show, too, so nothing is scarier than that.
And you actually, you're talking about a time with Louie and Keeley that started with the late 40s, had its highlight through the 50s, and had its demise into the 60s. Mm-hmm. And then you go back even further in time to take pretty much most of the first half of the 20th century with the history of Buster Keaton.
No, it's fun. It's really fun to sort of research these times. I actually have a book that breaks down each decade and sort of what the, you know, how, what the language was, what the trends were then, what people were into then. You know, it helps me as I do all my research.
Yeah. Now, French, I always knew you were a very physically oriented, a good physical comedian. Didn't know you could do the mime walk that well. Had you really studied before this project, the physical comedy of Buster Keaton?
Well, you know, I mean, it's kind of funny, Julio. It's like I had watched a lot of his work and a lot of Chaplin and a lot of Harold Lloyd. But, you know, a lot of my training came from, first of all, I did children's theater for Kaiser Permanente for like 6 years. And you do really physical things. And then later on, I would do a lot of children's movies, and it's really always, you know, some precocious redheaded kid pushing me out of the treehouse. But, you know, it's just, I've always felt like to continue to work in any venue always makes you better. And, you know, I didn't expect that, you know, it would pay off like later in my life, but it just does. I think that you have to be humble and you have to work, and you have to work in a lot of different areas and work for free and do stuff that maybe you don't want to do, but it pays your house payment, and eventually it makes you better if your spirit is in the right place. And so I think that's what it is. So
now you had a choreographer and a stunt choreographer in this project. So do you have to go into training to do this?
Yeah, I did. Well, we did a lot of yoga at Runyon Canyon. We go, there's this great, this awesome guy that teaches yoga over at Runyon Canyon, Daniel Overberger. I love him. He's really funny and he teaches yoga. So I just wanted to stretch my old ass out and you know, get things together. And then, you know, and now just night in, night out, that's kind of my workout. So,
Our stunt coordinator, too, Andrew Amani, did lot of workshops with the whole cast where he brought out these mats and trampolines and taught people how to do the rolls and the pratfalls and all that, you know. So,
Yeah, he's wonderful. Andrew Amani is wonderful. I mean, he's an artist and he's, you know, he understands the big picture really well and he understands actors and he can adjust things to your body. It's great.
Oh, by the way, Jay from El Portal came on the line just to say how much he loved having Louie and Keeley.
Hi, Jay.
In its last incarnation. That was a great stage to do that.
It was. We loved doing it at El Portal.
El Portal's beautiful.
Yeah, we were able to try out some songs there that we hadn't done in the show. So, Jay, you got to come see the show.
Yeah.
The show now, I'm wildly curious. You do a routine with your Fatty Arbuckle character, who's wonderful.
Right. Yes, and Scott Leggett.
I must say, and it's the dinner table thing where everything is tied to ropes and pulleys, and you have to throw things, grab things, and throw it. And I was going to say, now somewhere along the line, they're probably going to goof up. They do it 3 shows a night. And there was one time the thing didn't work, and your Fatty Arbuckle character just so beautifully handled the audience.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Every now and then, it's almost a disappointment when we do it just perfectly, because it robs us of this sort of great Carol Burnett-style connection with the audience, where they realize you're trying to make this impossible thing happen, and it becomes like a carnival game where they see how many times you can do it, and then you finally get it done, and then they love it. So I'm not sure what's better, messing it up or not messing it up.
Now, when you, of course, putting this together, it's one thing, but when you finally put an audience from it, were you surprised where the laughs were, the laughs weren't, where the groans were, the sighs and all of that?
It's really great for me this time to be a writer, like, because with Louie and Keeley, I was on stage, so I wasn't able to receive, you know, what the audience... Well, I kind of got what the audience was doing, but being in the audience, like, so much, and really them... People around me don't know that I'm the writer, you know, so I really get genuine reactions of... You know, when people are sort of digging it, or when they're bored, or whenever, you know, which they're not bored very much. It's such an exciting show. But,
well, has the show evolved? Have you learned some things? Are you tinkering it with it as you go?
In my head, I am. Like, the actors are adjusting, making adjustments, and in the middle, I'm sort of rewriting for the next, wherever we go next, you know. So I don't think it'll change that much in the script, but there are things that I want to tighten up and move around. And
it's just you want to evolve it, and every now and then somebody does something that's you know, it's just unexpected riches, and then you go, oh, that fixed something that I thought was a script problem, but it was not. It was an actor problem. So it's, you know, I mean, you always want to grow your product. It's hard in 99 seat waiver, because at a certain point you can't bring the director back in. You can't, like, there are a lot of things that you once it's up and going, it's up and going, and you can do some notes, but you can't, like, keep working it the way you would like to. So, you know, it becomes taking down notes for what you're going to do next time.
Well, it's why I wanted to go back to Sacred Fools to give birth to another show, because it was such a great place to start Louie and Keeley, to learn so much. And, you know, the financial risk wasn't very much to start a show. I mean, I know in New York it's $100,000 to workshop a show, and here, you know, these guys are a group of artists. They just want to get the art going, and they're so supportive in the whole company. And so I'm very proud to do this show, to start this show again.
It's a great home theater. It's you know, for all my years at the cast, that was a wonderful home theater, and Sacred Fools is just a wonderful home theater. It's a great place to be and come, you know, try and legitimately make art. And, you know, I always feel like if you can't make something great, make a great mess. And it's...
Well, you know, I thought I was being adventurous following Louie and Keeley, you know, around town. But, friends, you have been on almost every stage.
Yeah, I've been everywhere. I know. I'm like a daytime hooker. I just go any place. Yeah, it's been about 30 years in L.A., so I'm kind of all over the place. But I like that. And I'm proud to be an L.A. theater actor. I like our theater scene, and I'll defend it tirelessly.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
The play, once again, I want to do this commercial before we have to end. Stoneface, The Rise and Fall and Rise of Buster Keaton, in its world premiere at Sacred Fools Theater Company, scripted by Vanessa Claire Stewart, directed by Jaime. You call him Jay. Jaime Robles.
Yeah, let's go Jaime.
Like
and it is running Thursday now, Thursday, Friday, Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 2 p.m., taking a great toll on your body. And the number to call is 310-281-8337, 310-281-8337. You can also go online to www.sacredfools.org. I must say, in the time that we have left, Vanessa, are we going to see you back on stage soon?
Oh, I hope so. No, we're just working it out, but we do plan on coming back very soon.
And I've been told to get myself out of here. So please come back. This is Julio Martinez for Arts and Review. We're just delighted to be back on Fridays 2 to 2:30, KPFK, 90.7 FM, Pacifica Radio for the greater Southern California area. Thank you for supporting us and keeping us on the air. Bye.